announcements this morning, but just hit some highlights here. The next women's fellowship, ladies' fellowship, will be at the home of Beth Boutat. Beth's not here, but Jeremy is in the back, or my wife is over here, Nicole. And you can contact them. That'll be July 24th at 6:30. There's an email address there, too, if you want more information on that. You can contact Nicole through that. And then July 28th, we're just encouraging you to save that date. We're going to have a church pig roast, fellowship time. Just hang out and eat some pig. Appropriate for our message today, I guess. Tyler Higgins is not here. His proud father's in the back, though. Tyler won a gold medal in CPR in the Skills USA competition in Kansas this week, and that was pretty cool. I thought that was worth mentioning. So, Mark chapter 5. We left off in Mark chapter 4, if you remember. If you were here last week, if you weren't, that is our practice to teach through the Word, verse by verse, chapter by chapter. So it is a continuous story. We want to make sure that we cover the full counsel of God. But in Mark chapter 4, that chapter ended with a storm. The disciples were on a boat with Jesus. They were in fear. We found Jesus was sleeping, resting his head on a pillow. And they woke him. Jesus arose and he rebuked the wind and said to the sea, "Peace, be still." The wind ceased and there was a great calm. And as I said then, you'd expect then these guys would be relieved. The storm was over. They were crossing the sea, and it turns up, and even though these guys were experienced fishermen, even though these guys were experienced sailors, we read that they were in fear of death. They thought they were going to die. "Peace be still." The wind ceased. There was great calm. But we read the last two verses of that chapter. It says, "But he said to them, 'Why are you so fearful? How is it that you have no faith?' And they feared exceedingly and said to one another, 'Who can this be that even the wind and sea obey him?'" Their fear didn't go away. They were then fearful of who this man Jesus was. They didn't fully get it yet. So chapter 5 says, "Then they came to the other side of the sea, to the country of the Gadarenes." This was a Gentile region. I'm sure relief set in then, right? They're finally on land, off that boat, can't fully get in their head what happened. They're on solid land. Let's read through a little bit and see what happens. "And when he had come out of the boat, immediately there met him out of the tombs a man with an unclean spirit, who had his dwelling among the tombs, and no one could bind him, not even with chains. Because he had often been bound with shackles and chains, and the chains had been pulled apart by him, and the shackles broken in pieces, neither could anyone tame him. And always, night and day, he was in the mountains and in the tombs, crying out, cutting himself with stones. And he cried out with a loud voice and said, 'What have I to do with you, Jesus, Son of the Most High God? I implore you by God that you do not torment me.' For he said to him, 'Come out of the man, unclean spirit.' Then he asked him, 'What is your name?' And he answered, saying, 'My name is Legion, for we are many.' And he begged him earnestly that he would not send him out of the country. Now a large herd of swine was feeding there near the mountains. So all the demons begged him, saying, 'Send us into the swine that we may enter them.' And at once Jesus gave them permission. Then the unclean spirits went out and entered the swine. There were about 2,000. And the herd ran violently down the steep place into the sea and drowned in the sea. So those who fed the swine fled, and they told it in the city and in the country. And they went out to see what it was that had happened." A lot there in this first part. Let's break it down a little bit. They get off the boat, expecting their hearts to be calmed. Immediately, they're met with a demoniac, a man possessed by demons. As we see here, Legion, there's many demons in this guy. This is the most detailed description we have anywhere in the Bible of demonic possession, what that's like, how that manifests itself in people. We know that that was not just something that happened then. It's something that can and does occur today. But they get off the boat in this Gentile region, and this guy immediately comes out and meets him from the tombs. What are tombs? We've talked about that some, place that the dead are buried, right? So this guy is living among the dead. Seems appropriate for what he is. Seems appropriate for this story. He's dwelling among the tombs. Lived there among the dead. This guy would have been considered unclean, certainly. Tombs were different than our graves today, where people are buried. People would be laid out. Certainly they'd be in different states of decay. That was his home. I'm sure this wasn't an immediate thing. He was possessed and put out there, or chose to be out there, but we don't have the full story of this guy. I don't know what you guys see or hear when you go through this. If like in my mind, it becomes a movie, and I want to know all the details, the background. How did this guy get to that point? Did people start noticing a little craziness in him? Did he expose himself in some way to demonic possession? Obviously, he did. What doors did he open up? Did he live among the community for a while? And it said in our text, often been bound in chains and shackles. So they made other attempts. In our own society, 100 years ago, somebody acted like this and we'd lock them up in a mental institution, probably, right? But that's inhumane, so now we put them in jail. They tried the same thing with this guy. Didn't work. Eventually, he was pushed out of the community, sent to live among the tombs. That was his dwelling spot. No one could bind him, not even with chains. Couldn't control this guy. The indication there, too, is being possessed by these unclean spirits, he couldn't control fully what he was doing. They were in control. So different than the indwelling of the Holy Spirit. Neither could anyone tame him. The shackles broken in pieces. We read in our papers today about people on bath salts. Picture that magnified multiple times. Superhuman strength. He would break the shackles broken in pieces. Neither could anyone tame him. And always, night and day, he was in the mountains and the tombs crying out, screaming, tormenting, hollering. This was what they were met with coming off the boat. They were already in fear. They're walking into this demoniac, crying and cutting himself with stones, being filled with these demons. We don't even have a lot of information about the demons. Who were they? Where did they come from? I don't want to speculate on that a whole lot, but Satan, unlike God, is not omnipresent. He can't be everywhere. I would believe these were the fallen angels that followed Satan when he left heaven, his little workers. Cutting himself with stones gave him a desire to hurt somebody. This was the only guy that he had. When he saw Jesus from afar, he ran and worshipped him. Jesus certainly didn't accept worship from the demons. And as I read this, I think we sort of see a split here where we get a little bit of this man and we get a little bit of the demons coming out. He cried out with a loud voice and said in verse 7, "What have I to do with you, Jesus, Son of the Most High God? I implore you by God that you do not torment me." The demons knew who had the power. The demons knew who would win this battle. But if you remember when we went through Matthew, I talked about superstition of the time and what it took to cast out demons. And one of the things that they believed was naming the full name of the demon was required. And that's what we saw here the demons do as they addressed Jesus. Not truly an admission of his deity and who he was, but that's what they stated. Indication of some level of faith, some level of head knowledge of who he was. "What have I to do with you, Jesus, Son of the Most High God? I implore you by God that you do not torment me." We don't know how many spectators were there. We know the disciples were there. They were just on the boat. But in that time, the spectators would have seen that, would have seen the demons call out Jesus by name and think perhaps that they have an advantage over him at that point. He says to them in verse 8, come out of the man, unclean spirit. Then he asks them, what is your name? So if you're standing by, you might think, okay, he's retaliating now. He's trying to find out their name. I'm sure Jesus knew what he was facing. We didn't. They didn't. The people that were there, the disciples. I think he asked the question not because he was required to know their name to cast them out, so that we would know what's going on here. I don't believe Jesus was following superstition. What is your name? And he answered, saying, my name is Legion, for we are many. In the Roman military, at the time, a legion was considered 6,000 men. I'm not implying that there was 6,000 demons inside this guy, but certainly there were several. He says, for we are many. Surely trying to intimidate Jesus, I'm sure, at this point. And the spectators, at that point, the demons named the name. The demons are many. Jesus is one. How is this going to go down? Also, he begged him earnestly that he would not send him out of the country. The Gospel of Luke says, not send him into the abyss. And we'll save that for when we get to Luke. But imagine the disciples at this point seeing this guy screaming, tormenting, cut all over with stones. I'd be jumping back on that boat, you know? Go back to the waves and the sea. We don't get a picture of what they were doing. They begged him. They knew who he was. Certainly weren't in a relationship of faith with Jesus, but they knew he was the Son of the Most High God. And they begged him. Really a form of prayer, talking to Jesus. Begged him earnestly that they wouldn't send him out of the country. Now a large herd of swine was feeding there in the mountains, verse 11. So all the demons again begged him, sought his permission, saying, send us to the swine that we may enter them. And at once Jesus gave them permission. I don't think he had a craving for deviled ham. I think there's more to it than that. He gave them permission. Also lets us know that demons can't even enter a pig, can't even do that, enter into an animal without permission from God, without permission from Jesus. Then the unclean spirits went out and entered the swine. There was about 2,000, and the herd ran down the steep place into the sea and drowned in the sea. Again, it doesn't necessarily mean that there was 2,000 demons. Certainly, there were several. They entered the pigs, and the pigs would rather die than be possessed. Ran to the cliff, went off the cliff, the rest followed. Certainly, I think it reveals to us the intent of those demons. They didn't want to be in the abyss, or they didn't want to leave the country. They wanted to indwell something. Their preference is to indwell men. Why is that? As I went through this, men are made in the image of God, right? Anything that they can do to tarnish that image, to uglify that image, if it's not a word, it should be, to strip away the image of God is what their desire is. So they wanted to inhabit the man. Jesus cast them out, and they went into these pigs. And I think in that, it reveals to us what their true intent was with this man, to kill, to destroy. Torture. Why would Jesus grant any request of the demons? Why would he allow them to go into the pigs? Again, I think it's for those reasons. I also don't think it was time yet for him to reveal his full power over the demons. That was on the cross. We see that in Colossians 2:15. Actually, backing up part of verse 14, says, and he has taken it out of the way, having nailed it to the cross, having disarmed principalities and powers, he made a public spectacle of them, triumphing over them in it, on the cross. And that hadn't yet come. We treat these things like you can catch a demon or it's contagious. And certainly if you are not a believer and you expose yourself to the occult or drugs or different forms of sin, that opens you up to that. There's also fascination among some Christians about that realm and that spectrum, and can we be possessed? I believe if you're a Christian, the Bible says in 1 John 4:4, greater is he that is in us. It's not me, is it? Greater is he that is in us, the Holy Spirit, than he that is in the world. Satan is in the world. Light can't dwell with darkness. So no, if you're a Christian, can't be possessed by a demon. Certainly by the Holy Spirit. Going on in verse 15, it says, then they came to Jesus and saw the one who had been demon-possessed and had the legion sitting and clothed and in his right mind, and they were afraid. Verse 16, and those who saw it told them how it happened to him who had been demon-possessed and about the swine. Then they began to plead with him to depart from their region. So the ones that had been feeding the pigs go back to the city, go back to the area of the country, tell others, and they come out and see the one who had been demon-possessed. That, I guess, is his new name. We don't know what his name was from this story. The one who had been demon-possessed. They see him, the one that had been bound, the one that kept breaking chains, the one that they booted out of their city to live in the tombs. They see this guy restored, sitting clothed and in his right mind, verse 15 says. And again, they're afraid. They're more afraid of this, more afraid of this guy restored than they were of the demoniac, cutting himself, screaming, horrifying. They're afraid. You know, that seems like such a stretch until I think back at my own life, until I think back at times when I was in sin, allowed myself to be exposed to things, knew that I wasn't in a right place, knew that I wasn't where I should be with the Lord. But like these people, I was more afraid what Jesus would mean in my life, what Jesus would do in my life, what I would have to change, what I would have to give up, what that meant. Dying to myself. They were afraid. Verse 16, and those who saw it told them how it happened to him who had been demon-possessed and about the swine. Then they began to plead with him, began to beg Jesus, began to pray. Those that weren't in a true relationship with him, plead with him to depart from their region. And he did it. He left, we'll see in verse 18. Granted their prayer. Left them alone. Free will, guys. He left them. Verse 18 says, and when he got into the boat, he who had been demon-possessed, again, his new name. Imagine being known by that every time you see somebody. Somebody sees you, hey, there's a guy that used to be demon-possessed. This guy begged him that he might be with him. Went to Jesus, Lord, please let me go. Please let me come with you. Imagine the superstitions that this guy had after inviting these things into his life, being possessed, being consumed, his life ruined by these demons, separated from his family, separated by the community, living among the dead. Everybody tried everything to no avail, and he gets put out. Jesus comes, and he's restored, clothed, sitting there. Fine, Lord, let me go with you. I have to be with you. So it won't happen again, so they won't come back. I have to be in your presence. Jesus did not permit them. Seems like a good request. However, Jesus did not permit them in verse 19, but said to him, go home to your friends and tell them what great things the Lord has done for you and how he has had compassion on you. And he departed and began to proclaim in Decapolis all that Jesus had done for him, and all marveled. Decapolis was this area, again, a Gentile region, a cluster of 10 Greek cities. We don't see that Jesus was called to go there, the disciples were called to go there. This guy begged Jesus to go with him. Certainly an indication of a sincere change of heart. Jesus tells him, go home to your friends. Tell them what great things the Lord has done for you and how he has had compassion on you. This guy had a far greater ministry where he was than he would have had going with Jesus. Far greater impact for the kingdom where he was than if he had gone with Jesus. A reminder, guys, that sometimes God knows, not sometimes, always, God knows things we don't know. We also see others here that made bad requests. Jesus beat it, leave, and he granted those. I think Jesus did it, like I said, for this guy and his superstitions. He didn't have to be right there traveling with Jesus. Jesus had healed him. Jesus wanted him to be a witness to that community. That's what we are, witnesses. As we talk about that word witness, sharing your faith, what does that mean? What does a witness do? Witness tells a story, right? A witness tells what they've seen. They're not the judge. They're not the prosecutor. They're not the defense attorney. They don't have to argue every point. A witness just tells their story. That's what the Lord had this guy do. That's what the Lord would have us do. Verse 21. It says, now when Jesus crossed over again by boat to the other side, a great multitude gathered to him, and he was by the sea. So Jesus, back when they're on the boat, and he says, let's go to the other side. They go through the storm. They show up, meet with this guy, deal with this guy. They're back on the boat. Do you get that? Jesus went over there. Why? For this demoniac. One guy. They crossed over again by boat to the other side. Verse 21, a great multitude gathered to him, and he was by the sea. And behold, one of the rulers of the synagogue came, Jairus by name. And when he saw him, he fell at his feet and begged him earnestly, saying, my little daughter lies at the point of death. Come and lay your hands on her, that she may be healed, and she will live. So Jesus went with him, and a great multitude followed him and thronged him. Thronged him. Throng means a densely packed crowd of people. So they gathered around. They packed in around him. We go from this demoniac right into Jairus. Jairus, a ruler of the synagogue, would have been probably a wealthy man, certainly a leader in the community, well known by all. A ruler in the synagogue shouldn't have been seeking after Jesus, or at least that wasn't the practice at the time. Should have been against him, really, not believing that he was the Messiah. But we see he begged him earnestly. He went to Jesus and begged, saying, my little daughter lies at the point of death. Come and lay your hands on her, that she may be healed, and she will live. This guy had faith. Went to Jesus, come, lay your hands on her. What, unlike the centurion that we discussed, that just said, say the word, Lord, and she'll be healed. Come, you've got to lay your hands on her. Jesus took the faith that he had, accepted the faith that he had, and went with him in verse 24. But imagine Jairus. We talked about him when we went through Matthew, and that just lays heavy on my heart as a dad, thinking about a little girl sick to the point of death. As we read on, we find that there's mourners there. Jairus being a wealthy guy, I'm sure there were several. I'm sure they gathered when someone was sick. It was a requirement. Even for the poor, they were required to have a minimum of 2 falutas, I think, and 1 mourner if there was a death. It signified grieving. It let the community know what was going on. Bewailing and howling, all that. But imagine a dad at the point, his little girl is going to die. Everyone there knows she's going to die. And he's got to make the choice. He hears that this Jesus is coming, that the boat has come back. but she's going to go. Do you stay with her? In those last moments, share those last moments of her life with her, or do you run and try to get help? Do you leave your wife there to deal with this alone? What if she dies while you're gone? Imagine that, guys. And he's the ruler of the synagogue. They've been opposed to Jesus. But he knows he needs Jesus. So much so that he's willing to leave that little girl, leave his wife in that state, and run to him. He needs Jesus, his only hope, our only hope. Jesus went with him. A great multitude followed and thronged him. So he leaves desperate, not knowing what's going to happen. He finds Jesus. He goes to Jesus, begs Jesus. Jesus says, "You okay?" And he follows him. And I imagine at that point, there's some hope restored. Okay, we're going to do this. I hope we make it in time. And verse 25 says, "Now a certain woman had a flow of blood for 12 years. What? Stick with the story. Mark, this is a gospel of action, I know, but it interrupts to me when I read that. It's like watching a show and "To Be Continued" comes up. Or it's the season finale and it's a cliffhanger. It just leaves us there. "Now a certain woman," verse 25, "had a flow of blood for 12 years and had suffered many things from physicians. She had spent all that she had and was no better, but rather grew worse. When she had heard about Jesus, she came behind him in the crowd and touched his garment. For she said, 'If only I may touch his clothes, I shall be made well.' Immediately the fountain of her blood was dried up, and she felt in her body that she was healed of the affliction. And Jesus, immediately knowing in himself that power had gone out of him, turned around in the crowd and said, 'Who touched my clothes?' But his disciples said to him, 'You see the multitude thronging? You see the multitude crowding in around you? And you say, "Who touched me?" And he looked around to see her who had done this thing. But the woman, fearing and trembling, knowing what had happened to her, came and fell down before him and told him the whole truth. And he said to her, 'Daughter, your faith has made you well. Go in peace and be healed of your affliction.'" Wow. Little interruption in her story, but so much there. This woman said she had a flow of blood for 12 years. As you guys know from history and culture at that time, just like our demoniac, that would have made her unclean. Couldn't have gone to synagogue, couldn't have gone into the women's courts to have that fellowship with other ladies. Husband couldn't have touched her. We don't know, but most likely divorced her, put her out. She was unclean. The crowd is thronging, the crowd is gathered. She shouldn't even be there around people. And when she heard about Jesus, she came behind him in the crowd, verse 27, and touched his garment. She wanted to do this secretly. She wanted to sneak in and be restored. She knew she needed Jesus. Verse 28, "For she said, 'If only I may touch his clothes, I shall be made well.'" This is after suffering many things from physicians. She'd spent all that she had. I know most of you know people that have been in that boat. Suffering, not knowing what to do, not knowing where to turn from help. Should I deal with the doctors in Bangor? Should we go to Portland? Should we go to Boston? Spending all that she had. She was no better, but actually grew worse in her condition. "If only I may touch his clothes, I should be made well." Verse 29, "Immediately the fountain of her blood was dried up, and she felt in her body that she was healed of the affliction. And Jesus, immediately knowing in himself that power had gone out of him, turned around in the crowd and said, 'Who touched my clothes?'" This is different, guys. Every other place when we see healing through Jesus or others, we get no indication that power left his body. She felt this healing. He felt it go out of her. Other than cable TV preachers, we don't see that in here with the power. If you remember a couple chapters ago in chapter 3, verse 10, It says, for he healed many, so that as many had afflictions pressed about him to touch him. That wasn't uncommon that people would try to do that. In fact, as we go on to our next chapter, chapter 6, verse 56, says, wherever he entered into villages, cities, or the country, they laid the sick in the marketplaces and begged him that they might just touch the hem of his garment, and as many as touched him were made well. No indication of power there. Only this one time we see that. She wanted to do this secretly. She wanted to come in from behind. Jesus says, who touched me? Called her out, drew attention to it. Several people touching him, bumping into him. She reaches out in faith, and something powerful happened. Who touched me? Verse 32 says, and he looked around to see her who had done this thing. Don't miss that, guys. He looked around to see her. Who touched me? He looked around to see her. He knew who it was, who had touched him, who the power went out into. Looked around to see her. Why would Jesus call her out in this crowd? This shame that she felt for 12 years, this embarrassment. As I read that, it's like, Lord, why would you do that? Embarrass her in front of these people. This issue, this flow of blood, not one that you can say, hey, I got healed of tennis elbow, or I had a crimp in my neck, but I was unclean. I don't believe he did it to embarrass her. I'll go into that. But even that, guys, you know, us, do we get embarrassed about Jesus? Not even things like this, but at work, at school, people say things come up in the news. They talk about faith. They talk about religion, talk about Christians. And maybe they know. Maybe they know you go to church, and it's, well, you're not one of those kind of Christians, right? And you say, well, what do you say? How do you respond to that? Are we too worried about being embarrassed? Is pride our God at times? He calls her out. At times we get called out. The woman then, who touched me, comes fearing and trembling, came at his feet, begged him, had total confidence she would be healed. Fearing and trembling, knowing what had happened to her, came and fell down before him and told him the whole truth, told him the whole story. Lord, here's where I've gone for help before I came to you. This doctor, that doctor, here's what's gone on in my life. I've been unclean for 12 years. Told him the whole truth. When's the last time you did that? Christian, when's the last time you laid before the Lord and just, Lord, here's what I'm struggling with. Here's what's going on. This is my battle. Lay out the whole truth. Imagine people are around hearing this stuff. Told the whole story about her husband leaving, probably about not being in fellowship. And he says to her daughter,